Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle podcast. I am your host, Society's mutant slash metahuman, Dakota Morgan, coming to you not from the home studio, actually, today. We usually do some stuff, but I actually am at Drawing the Comics in downtown Glendale in Arizona with my special guest here today.
My name's Ken Brown. I'm the owner of Drawing the Comics.
And?
My name is Danny Morales, and I'm an art dealer, and I own a website called pencilinkcolor.com, where I sell original comic book artwork.
So two guys I want to say that are pretty influential in the comic book business around here, to say the least here. One, you sell the books directly, and then you sell the art direct. Well, in a sense, directly almost, too.
Yes.
Yeah, so really, I want to ask you guys, for both of you, where was the time, because we like to ask here on the show, what was the thing that got you into comics? Kind of going back in time, look at your younger selves. What was that thing?
Yes, man. It started off with Spider-Man's Amazing Friends and G.I. Joe cartoons.
Really?
And Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, Saturday mornings, you had to wake up, watch Spider-Man, Firestar, and Iceman, the Incredible Hulk right afterwards, too. And that was my first exposure to comic book superheroes. Plus, I got to give a shout-out to the 66 Batman series, because during summertime, you come in from lunch, and Adam West and Burt Ward were there every day, Monday through Friday.
Really?
So those are the early, early interest in comics. But growing up a kid in the 80s, video game arcades and stand-up arcades were everywhere. So it's kind of cool about having, I don't want to give a, you know, too much of a shout out, but I'm going to anyway. Lemoncade across the street is one of the coolest things I've ever seen get built downtown Glendale, because there's a great thing we can play off of each other. I remember that's how I got my comic start, was playing Star Wars and Spy Hunter at the 7-Eleven in my neighborhood. And then I would, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a car designer. And I don't know if you ever heard of a magazine called Cartoons. It's kind of like Mad Magazine for cars. They more or less do stories of people and their cars. And I was a big Hot Wheels kid. I loved everything that had to do with anything that had to do with cars for some reason. I mean, Time Magazine, TV Guides, I like try to study the different designs. I'd sit there like and do more or less name off competitions and drive my mom nuts. She'll tell you the story too if you ever get a chance to talk to her. Because it's just like that, hey mom, what kind of car is that? And she goes, let me get up next to it. So it's a Firebird. And she goes, I'd be a stupid little brat. Say, oh yeah, I knew that. Like 3 or 4
yeah,
years old.
Yeah, we know.
But
that's
that
right.
Was just, you know, an interest. The Cartoons Magazine made the fun part of cartoons and cars into one thing. But in that same section at 7-Eleven, there were comic books. And one of the first things that really drew my eye, besides G.I. Joe comics, were Spider-Man number 258, where you have Peter Parker being pulled between a black costume and a red and blue costume. And I'm going, what is this? And I flipped inside, and on the first page, you saw Spider-Man in a black and white suit. And I've never seen that before in the cartoons, because, you know, Firestar, Iceman, Spider-Man, every week it was red and blue suits, and, you know, Iceman in a standard look and Firestar in her standard look. Yeah. And I'm going, what is this? And that was, you know, my introduction to comic book reading. And I started realizing within about, I would say, that same year, there were comic book shops around, too. And me and my dad would go get our haircuts together, and I would go to the drugstore on the corner and find more comics there while he was getting his haircut, and got more absorbed into different things like X-Men and checking out different characters like Flash and Batman. But Spider-Man was the number one thing that grabbed me right away besides G.I. Joe. And G.I. Joe was easy because you knew all the action figure characters and you watched the cartoon. So those characters were already right there. Same with Spider-Man too. I mean, Spider-Man's Amazing Friends, you already kind of knew the personality of the characters there. But when we're driving home one day, there was a bookstore that said comics in the window. And I, like, it's kind of still to this day, I remember, Dad, stop. I apologize for tapping the table.
Hey, you're good.
But it's like, comics. And he goes, what? What are you talking about? That bookstore over there, it's got comics. Can we stop? And sure enough, you know, he said, not that exact day, but the next time, you know, we're out and about, we have time, we can go do that. And we went in there, and it was a bookstore up front. I'm kind of going, okay, where are the comics? Then you go to the back of the store, and there's a little comic shop in the back of the bookstore. And I still remember to this day, it was called I'm a Bookstore, kind of one of the most generic names I think you'd ever hear from a shop.
Almost, yeah.
But there was a comic section in the back, and it was like long boxes and some shelves of like newer comics and supplies. And on the other side of the wall, they had comics more or less that were the keys, as we know them now, as I know them now, were on the wall to take a look at too. And I said, hey, do you know anything about black costume Spider-Man? Because I found all the ones I could find at my 7-Eleven and drugstore. And they go, yeah, right over here. And Spider-Man number 252 was where it got started, and it said $4 rather than 60 cents on the cover. And I'm going, $4? I go, why isn't it 60 cents? And he goes, well, these can kind of can become collectible and hard to find, too. And I go, okay, so... As a little kid, you don't have a whole lot of money. And so I kind of asked, like, well, how do I know, you know, I'm not getting charged too much as a kid? You know, you don't know what's what. And everything's like a sponge to you. He goes, well, there's something out there called Comics Value Monthly, and it's no longer being published, but it was a price guide that was out in the early to mid 80s. Mm-hmm. And in that, he starts showing me, like, see this right here? This is Spider-Man. He goes, right here, Spider-Man number 252, first black costume, $4. And that's how we get our price. And I'm going, okay. And I go, can I buy this magazine? And he goes, sure, you can buy it if you like all day long. And it's okay. So I started more or less reading not only just the comics, but about how the industry started working. Mm-hmm. And that kind of butterflied effect all the way to where we are today at Toronto Comics. A long story kind of medium size rather than short.
Medium size. Well, I mean, the story is beautiful itself here. I don't know how you're going to top that.
No,
I'm not
going to
be able to.
No, but it is a beautiful story. I mean, it's one to show that if you chase your dreams, you go after what you love, you never know what can happen. I mean, you know, with myself, I work in film and whatnot too, and zoo and everything like that. So more or less, film's a little bit better, and I like that a little bit more, but still making it work. You're selling art now, which is probably a thing you probably like to do as well.
Yeah.
So just chase after the dreams. We always say it on the show. Chase after them. You never know.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one thing, like, growing up with it, too, is, like, my dad was kind of like, okay, this is a hobby. Hmm. And my mom's like, if you have passion for this, if you think you can make this work, chase it.
Yeah.
Because if you're happy doing what you're doing, you won't have to chase the dollar, and you'll never have to work a day of your life, because people will see that passion in you. And they'll trust you, and they'll want to work with you too,
True.
And I tell that to anybody, no matter what field you're in, whether you're comics, art, car design. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, I used to want to be a sports radio talk show host, and that was something else besides. Because there's three things I wanted to do as a kid: either be a car designer, open a comic shop, or be a sports radio talk show host. Mm-hmm. Doing things like podcasting now, oh my gosh, dude, this is like an amazing part of being alive in this point in history, is because you can make all of your dreams come true. You just got to pursue and learn information about how to make it happen.
It's true. And so when is your sports podcast coming out, Ken?
Oh, man, I got to find someone to do it with me.
Yeah.
Too, it's like that.
I think in Arizona, you're good, because we have, like, especially with Cardinals and everything like that, you definitely.
Yeah. Did you hear the news about the Suns? And there's the arena going on right now.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear both sides of the story, because, like I said, I listen to a lot of sports radio, too, and Sarver was getting buried on that first day.
Yeah.
And it's good to see we have the other side of the story, where the Phoenix City is not revealing the information. And Sarver's all there, hey, I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up to you guys to more or less get the funding done.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of cool to see, like, that Sarver's been buried by the press the past 5 years out here, because the Suns have had a 9-year playoff drought.
Mm-hmm.
And to see, unfortunately, the owner be the one that's blamed for it. Unfortunately, sometimes not all teams are great. Like, look at the Cardinals. The Cardinals had a good run for the past 5 years.
Just don't pick the right people to run your business.
Yes.
Run the team, and that's a lot of their fault, too.
Yes.
Yeah. But if the owner is the one that's hiring them, if he's not doing a good job picking the right people, then the blame goes to him.
Exactly. We've had that even here, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had some great staff members, and we've had some not-so-great staff members. But right now, I said the staff right now is in a twilight period. We've got a great staff, and that's helping us, I think, excel even more, because you're only as good as the people that are with you.
And so
I know what you mean, dude. So it's good to that's a very good point to see, like, that, you know, Sarver's had some tough times with general managers, and as I said too, he's something I learned as a business owner too, is micromanaging can only go so far.
You
you start from scratch, and Danny, we've talked about this in the past too, is like, we've been friends since 2005, and him coming to the store, he was one of our first year customers. And there's times like that, you know, it's like, he's seen me over the year, we've had some good conversations about, I have a hard time, growing pains, to not feel like I'm not doing enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had to, like, let that go a lot. Like, that, let the talent that's here with you and your staff, they have that same passion too, I started realizing. And if you let them grow, they obviously are going to carry you too as well. And you can't do it all by yourself. That was pretty amazing, amazing time since I've had to take a couple years to let that sink in. Because me and Dan had some really good long conversations about, like, man, dude, I'm feeling like that. I'm not doing my part anymore.
Hmm.
And it's not for doing a part. You just got to find different things to do.
Yeah, that's true. You've got an excellent team, man. You got your own Phoenix Defenders over here. Oh, you really do. I vouch 100%, folks.
Yeah.
Epic staff. You guys are wonderful. You yourself are wonderful, too.
Yeah.
like thanks for coming on to this show. Thank you both for coming on, by the way, as well. I'm curious.
That's your Danny.
Yeah. Well, where'd you start, Danny? What happened with comics?
Mine is similar to Ken in a way, because I come from a small little town in California, and the only places that I ever saw comic books were either at 7-Eleven or at a local drugstore. And I remember walking into the local drugstore, and the covers of these comic books just kind of pop out at me. This was the early days, well, in the late 80s, I guess, where you had Todd McFarlane on Spider-Man, Jim Lee on X-Men, and then Rob Liefeld starting on New Mutants. And I was drawn to these covers, and it kind of made me want to buy them. And then also at the time, there was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated show. And I didn't know, of course, in the beginning when it first started, I didn't know it was a comic book. I thought it was just a TV show. And then I remember a friend telling me about that. He goes, hey, it's a comic book. So then when I went specifically looking for them, but I couldn't find them at the drugstore 7-Eleven. And then somebody told me that there's this town that was maybe about an hour away from where I lived at. They go, they have a comic book store and you might be able to find them there. So then I got my parents to take me. And then I found out that at a comic book store they had back issues. And that's where I found all these Ninja Turtle comics, but I found that these Ninja Turtle comics were nothing like the TV show.
Yeah.
They were a lot more violent and crazier, but then that made me want them more.
Yeah, that's true. You're looking like, oh my god, it's more epic in here. Yes. What is going on?
Yeah, so that started off me buying comic books, and then, you know, I started growing and growing, and then like a lot of people, they kind of drop off. Like when I got into high school, I stopped buying comic books. And then my senior year in high school, I decided, let's see what comic books are like now. And I walked into a comic book store and I started talking to the owner, and he told me what's hot and what everybody likes. So then I picked up a few books and I've been hooked ever since again. And then I got to go to my first San Diego Comic-Con. And in, I think it was in 1996, where you could actually just show up the day of the show and just buy a ticket to get in.
Really?
Yes, that's how it was back then. It wasn't as packed as it is now. They didn't have celebrities, really, you know, and it was more of a real comic book show. Hollywood wasn't there, so I missed that part of it. I've gone to a lot of them, but that first one was great. But then I found out when I was at this show toward the last day that I noticed this guy in front of me asked this artist for a sketch, and I was like, you could do that? I go, I didn't know that. So then it was my turn to get this book signed, and I was like, can I get a sketch? He's like, sure. And he drew me something. So then when I would go in line to get autographs from artists, I would ask for a sketch then. And then that's what kind of got the ball rolling for me collecting art. So then the following year, when I went to San Diego, I saved up all my money. I would see artwork for sale in the back of comic books, and you can kind of, through mail order, you can buy them. So I did that a few times. And then when I went to San Diego Comic Con the next year is when I just started buying art. And I bought all, you know, from different, found out there was art dealers, and then you can buy from artists, and it kind of all just blew up from there. And I've been buying ever since. So I think I've been collecting for about 20 years.
Wow.
Now original art, and then maybe for the past 8 years I've been running a website, pencilinkcolor.com, where I sell art, and I represent 6 artists: Livio Ramondelli, Eddie Nunez, Joel Gomez, Jaime Mendoza, Alan Martinez, and Norm Ratman.
Love Norm Ratman's work.
Yeah,
Norm too.
Norm is great. Really, really fun guy. Really funny.
Yeah.
And so I've been able to make friendships with all these people, which is great. And I tell myself, if one day I decided I didn't want to run this website anymore or be an art dealer, I made a lot of great friendships out of it.
That's beautiful.
And it's also nice to have friends in the industry. A lot of great perks out of it, I guess, to have all these people. But but it's a great hobby. It could be an expensive hobby, of course. It's can be a lot more expensive than buying comic books.
Well, I can honestly see that.
Yeah,
I can, because Ken, we love you and everything like that. Yeah. But it's true. Yeah. Of the
original art's expensive.
Yes, you know, because we love you. I know we got a couple of comic artists who listen to work at Marvel and DC and whatnot.
Yeah,
and we love you guys because so much time, so much effort into it. It makes sense. And the people who think it's all. I love the people who are like, oh, I'll pay $20, and it's this like big print, and it's all hand drawn and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, it's worth $20. You just did it here. It's like, no, it took me. It's about $100 or something like that, because you're not paying for what's done there. You're paying for the years it took to be able to get to that, and the yes. years and the practice to
yes, definitely. I mean, I know, like, when I first started collecting, artwork was fairly cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for a long time, the most expensive piece of art I ever bought was like $250.
Wow.
Which to me, at the time I was in college, was a lot of money. But I loved at the time, it was actually a page of Gen 13 by J. Scott Campbell.
Nice.
And I loved yeah. I loved J. Scott Campbell. He was one of my favorite artists back then. And so at the time I was trying to collect anything, a piece of art from all the artists who had worked on Gen 13. But mm-hmm. I was lucky enough, you know, to pick up that piece. But now, like, if you want something from Campbell, it's thousands of dollars, you know. So yeah. I was lucky to have bought that piece back then. But the art scene has changed a lot. You could still find stuff fairly cheap, but, like, if you really wanted to go out, you could buy pieces for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm.
You could buy, like, Jack Kirby, especially Jack Kirby.
He's, I can believe it.
He's the guy that probably has a lot of, like, the record sales of things. And then, of course, Steve Ditko, John Romita. The more modern artists, the highest sales are probably going to be McFarlane. Sells for tons of money. He had a cover. One of his Incredible Hulk covers sell for $500,000.
Really?
Yeah, that one where it's him, like, breaking the Hulk.
Yeah.
I forgot what issue.
Like 345's
was.
Cover, yeah, I think, yeah, it is. Think it the double sized yeah. issue.
Ken with the knowledge.
Yeah. Ken will remember all the numbers and issues. And then, of course, McFarlane stuff. People love his Spider-Man. It's very yeah. influential. So those pages can sell for tens, $20,000-$30,000 a page. Covers, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I believe it.
It's
I
just am. Like back issues. I mean, yeah. the more important the piece of the yes. art is to the history of yeah. comic books, mm-hmm. the more valuable it becomes.
That's
like,
true.
Like Action Comics number one's not like a people are. What I see 8 million someone put out this year that Action Comics number one sold yes. for.
Was it 8 million?
Yes, wow. And I go, the only reason why that book's worth $8 million versus another 10-cent comic like Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. number one being worth what about maybe 300,000. Is that Superman started the superhero genre.
Yep.
And
true.
So when you have precedent and key things that make the comic yeah. industry a special place, it's yeah. always going to mature in value.
It's like the mm-hmm. first appearance of Batman as well, Detective yep. Comics 27.
And yeah. there's nothing like Batman before Batman.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I guess in pulp you, books,
yeah, I was
going to
say, like, The Shadow.
Comic-wise.
Or the Spider, I think.
Yeah.
Know, those guys like that.
And Action's hitting, oh, not Action. Detective's hitting, what, 1,000 pretty soon?
Yes.
Yeah, when is
did
that
did you hear the big news about that?
I did not.
They're going to introduce the new Arkham Knight inside Detective Comics 1000. So all the people that love the Batman what? Video game series, supposedly the rumor is that's not Jason Todd, so it'll be a brand new character being the Arkham Knight. Spoiler alert for all the people that are playing, haven't played Batman Arkham Knight video game to the
oh,
end.
Oh, if you're listening to this show, you definitely, we've had people on from the Arkham games,
yes.
so if they are still listening and they still haven't played, shame on you. You're oh, fool. I, you're an idiot.
Yeah, my,
it's like, oh no, I've seen that before.
My
they're like,
friend,
hmm.
yeah. Carlos DeAnda, he drew all the concept artwork for all those characters in
oh.
Arkham. He designed the Harley Quinn, the like she kind of looks like a nurse.
Oh, the first
he,
one?
The first one, he designed that.
Oh.
He designed all the characters on that game.
Oh.
Yeah, he's an amazing artist.
I will say that yeah. I want that. I'm going to give, I know, how do I say this right, is I'm transferring a thanks from an actor friend of mine who played the Riddler because he loved the design and collects everything for it. Wally is such a nice guy. He's done an audio movie for me. He's done a bunch of different stuff. He's been on the show a bunch. He will, his thanks, I'm going to transfer his thanks, so we'll be the messengers in between of the thank you of this, because he has so many, has like shells full of this. He sent me, oh, yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts. But curious, Ken, what is it like in 2018? We're about to go, the date of recording, it's almost, it's December 14th. So what is it like in these years, I guess we could say, to actually work and operate a comic book store? What is it like with that? Because people are like, oh,
yes.
digital versus going to the store and whatnot. What's it like from the man himself who runs it all?
Yes, dude. It's hard work.
Yep.
I said, too, as much as you love it, it's not easy.
Hmm.
And a lot of things right now, too, is that there's so many more publishers. And yes, there were indie publishers back in the 80s, too. There was Eclipse Comics. There was obviously Dark Horse getting started in the 80s.
Comico.
Mirage Studios, mm-hmm. Comico,
First
Comics. These, like, the comic publishers that some of them are here and some of them are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be all through history. But, like, right now, there is more product. I call it right now this era of comics Netflix on paper.
Really?
There is so much stuff out there. It doesn't matter whether you're a superhero fan or you're a horror fan or you're a drama fan or you're a romance fan. I mean, Archie's still, like, look at it right now. Riverdale is one of the hottest CW shows. And Archie's been around since the 1940s. And they've done Archie cartoons in the past. That's and they've cool. done things with Archie through the world of television in the past. But right now, everything's hitting at the same time. It's like that. You know, Batman 66 was popular because there was nothing else like it back then. Do you know what I mean? But eventually there was nothing else like it, and so the genre kind of wore old. And so now you have things repetitively continuing to come out, and it's because they have 75 to 80 years worth of material. That the one thing I've really woke up me a lot on why this industry is so hot right now is when I found out movies are all storyboarded. And if you think about how the comic industry works, everything is storyboarded.
The cartoons as well.
Cartoons
You're
as well.
You're reading a storyboard itself.
It's
in a comic.
Easy for Hollywood. They don't have to do as much work. And everything material-wise is right there. They can visually see it and go, I get how to put this together as a film.
You know what's a good
so
example?
So it makes the creativity so much more fast-paced. And plus with digital media being so like creative right now, you can have a, how many people, if you look through the credits now, oh my gosh, credits were for like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Avengers back, Infinity War, back, that's a 40-minute thing right there.
Yeah, and you go back 25 years, like the end credits would be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And now you're going like 15, 20 minutes and you wait for those credits. And that's how we know they're 15, 20 minutes now is because at the end we get little bonus things. And they were doing bonus things back in the past. If I remember correctly, was Howard the Duck, did they have something bonus at the end of the George Lucas one back in the 80s? But I remember like certain movies having things to wait for at the end of the 80s and 90s. I'm just trying to remember for sure. But I vaguely remember. It wasn't as big as it is now.
No. Now I think it's so much bigger because of Marvel and stuff like that. Definitely, the end credit scenes. I mean, recently the Spider-Man one, I heard there's one for there. And that's not even, I mean, what? There was one for Venom 2. And it's Marvel, but it's not Marvel Studios. So even Sony's like, listen, we got to get on this bandwagon. We're still going to do it, which I haven't. No spoilers for Spider-Man and the Multiverse, or Spider-Verse, please, because I've not seen it yet. So,
but it's visual and there's material. That's like the two things you need to be a movie maker. You need something visual and you need something that's going to hold the interest of the people watching for 2 hours.
The best, I think the best example of you're talking about how you can use the comic or storyboard is if you watch the Sin City movies.
Oh, perfectly.
They basically just took the book and they go, we're shooting Frank it scene Miller. By scene. And they didn't even storyboard. They had the comics, and that was the storyboard.
Which is crazy, because there's going to be at least two people on their show, or there's a few people that would be like, well, then why don't they just copy the books and whatnot? It's like, they changed
so much
a couple
material
things.
Again.
Yeah, you have so much. You can't just take it 100%.
You take bits
like, Sin City, you can do it.
Plus, in comics, there's certain things that you can do and you can't do, like the costumes. Some of the costumes look really cool in comics, but they don't translate to real life.
That's true.
So that's why, like, you might not see Wolverine's suit as an example. It might look, it looks cool in real life, but it doesn't, they couldn't translate it to real life. You know, in real life, that's why you didn't see him in that yellow suit. Or I guess you might have saw in the extras, there was a scene where you get to see the costume in a case or whatever.
Yeah, but he didn't put it on. We didn't see what it looked like. Yes. There's a difference as a costume designer and builder. Let me tell you, it looks good when you put it on, like in a case, and then you could look like trash on a person.
Because I think, like, if you were to take everything exactly from the comics, everybody's wearing spandex, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it would be. And not everybody looks good in spandex, I guess.
Got a point. I mean, you can't make it work too much. Yeah. I mean, you can try, but Andy Poon, we've had on the show, he's a concept designer. He helps design the costumes and whatnot for all the CW shows. Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, all them. Yeah. And Legends, too. Can't forget about Legends. And he says it all the time, where he's a big comic book fan. Big comic book fan, luckily. And it's so tough. He's like, you know, as a fan, you have to be able to learn when you're making it, to learn the difference between what you can bring the page to real life, what you can put on there. He's like, it's so difficult. And as a fan, you can't do it because it's so tough because you're like, oh, we need to put in this. Like, he gave an example of like Black Canary in fishnets. He's like, I 100% want every new costume, want to get Black Canary, her fishnets, but I can't do it because it won't work. So we give a version of it. So. But that's neat to hear that what it's like now. And you need the Patnett quote, by the way. That's a really good quote. That's Netflix on paper.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, it's
That's what I tell customers all the time. I mean, the easiest way to think about comic books, if you're not exposed to, do you watch Netflix? Yeah, I love Netflix. Well, what do you like to watch on Netflix? Mm-hmm. Let me show you something that's similar to what you're already watching. Mm-hmm. And then if sometimes people just don't like the comic book medium because it's choppy. If you watch TV first a lot and you try picking up a comic book, it's frame by frame. Do you know what I mean? And when you're watching a motion picture, it's constantly in motion.
Yeah.
And so very rarely you'll get someone that just can't translate over to enjoying it the same way.
Mm.
And that's something that I think is the biggest challenge for the future of comic book readers and people that go see the movies and TV is, like, even on digital. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're looking at a digital, it's not in motion. It's still frame by frame. Yeah.
And I was going to say, the other big thing that I think, too, that makes it hard for people that are not necessarily comic book fans and see a movie and go, hey, I want to check out a comic book, and they come to the store, what you see in the movie isn't necessarily what you're going to see in the comics. And then, like, I think back in the early days of comic books, the Silver Age, or the, you know, maybe even into the Bronze Age, sometimes it's just every single issue was one story.
Yes.
You could get one issue and you have a whole story, where now it's very rare you get that. You have to buy, it's a whole arc, five or six issues to get one story. So it makes it harder for somebody to come in. But I guess a good thing that you could sell them as a store owner, you could sell them trades.
Yes.
So you can get full stories that goes, well, if you don't want to do this and you want a complete story, here you have this.
Yeah. The thing that's a major battle with people that go to see the movies and the people that come in looking for comics is that the comic fans know there's canon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Movie watchers do not understand the concept of canon. And so that's why you see things, and the comic publishers try their best to, and I'm not saying no moviegoer understands canon for the first time, but that's something like in any type of storytelling, whether they're looking at the movie or, say, for instance, Harry Potter. You know, when the Dark Tower is a good example. Like, Dark Tower, some people love the Dark Tower comics, and then other people kind of feel like they left a lot of stuff out. Because you can fit so much more into a book that you can't fit into a comic. It's the exact same translation from comic to movie. There's so much more in the comic you can't fit into the movie. So do you know what I'm talking about? So it's kind of like a build-up effect. Sure. And so when someone's brand new, you kind of like see that what the comic industry's done to battle that is they'll do a similar type of story.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Spider-Man 3 came out, they did Back in Black. They kind of tie back into the black costume connection earlier in the podcast. Back in Black was not him getting the symbiote again, but something in Civil War, which was the major story gone right now, Aunt May got hit by a stray bullet when it was aimed for either Mary Jane or Peter Parker.
Remember that story?
In that story, he found out Kingpin put on the hit. And so he wanted to show more or less Kingpin how pissed off he was about that situation. So he asked Mary Jane permission. I want the black suit back because I need to teach Kingpin that he can never mess with us again. And it's the most ticked off, but the Back in Black was more symbolism of Spider-Man being angry from what happened during Civil War. But ironically, it's the same time Spider-Man's in the black suit in the movie. Had nothing to do with the symbiote or Venom, but you come in, you got a great Spider-Man story that anybody can jump into if you understand the concept of Spider-Man, and it's only a 3-month story that's a teaser just to get your appetite wet to want to read more. And I think the comic industry is kind of adapted in that way. Let's have a relevant story that we feel is a good quality story that we can get people excited about reading more comics no matter what happens in the movies.
Which is a great thing. I mean, because we're all comic book readers. You know, Daddy, you got yours sitting right here on the table that we're recording on, which I haven't read that yet, by the way, but I've heard good things.
It's pretty cool. Nick Spencer's doing a killer job on Amazing Spider-Man right now.
Oh, my God. You know my pull list. It's big.
Yes.
Well, it's not on the top yet, but it's big. There's so many good things going on right now.
Yeah.
What is it like, though, for Danny, for you, for selling art at the moment in this day and age? Because people can just go online, look it up, and see that. And then you go to cons and stuff like that. What's it like on your end?
It's changed a lot. And the one thing that's changed a lot, and I don't want to complain, I guess, too much, but I think the biggest thing that I don't like that's happened is modern art is now surpassing the value of old artwork.
Wow.
So like a book, let's say this book, right?
Yeah.
This cover right here.
Amazing Spider-Man number 11.
Right. I love Ryan Ollie. This is a great artist, but like this cover, you go to his art dealer, $2,000 or $3,000.
Wow.
Really?
The interior pages, $500 or $600. Hey, if you can get it, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You know, but the guy, I the one thing I know is the guy that's going to turn around and go, hey, I don't want this anymore and I want to sell it, you're not going to get that the much money as you pay for it.
It's overinflated to start off
yes,
with.
Yes, I think the market is kind of going, I don't want to go negative, but like kind of like in the days where there was a lot of speculating.
Mm-hmm. I see a lot with the variants going on the market
and it's
right
happening
now,
mm-hmm. and it seems like it's going there, and it's like, is there going to be a collapse again? And is it, but if that happens, I think the market is going to correct itself.
Yes.
And everything will be where it kind of should be. But there are still a lot of great things. I think nowadays with, makes me sound old, but with the internet and everything. Yeah, with the internet and everything has really expanded things where there's so many more artists now, especially from artists, you know, from overseas, yes. whether it be Europe or Asia, you know, and all these other countries now. Now you see a lot of these new artists, not just from America, you know, but from overseas in these books. And I think like there's so many great artists that are in overseas that you never see their work here, but they could be in any of these titles and they would be big artists, I believe.
It's true. Yeah. I've talked to a few people. We tried to get them on the show, but due to time differences, it was always a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Was people in France.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We got French, we got Spain.
Actually, like my, like outside of America, like my customers,
mm-hmm.
My biggest customers are either from France or from Italy.
Really? Wow.
Those are, for me personally, in the art business, those are the big art collectors. Not that there are not other art collectors like in the UK and stuff, but it seems like in Europe, it's the French people and the Italian people that buy the most art.
They know what's up.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah, and I think because they make a lot of comics, especially in uh-huh. Italy, I think they make, there's a lot of comics there and a lot of great artists that have come from there.
That's true. 100% true.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's, I wouldn't say it's too negative, though, because
yeah.
that's just how the market is right now,
yeah.
and you know, and it's
yeah.
good that people know the market from both of your guys' sides
sure.
of things here, I mean, because,
yeah.
Danny, you were a surprise on this. I didn't expect to have you here today, so.
I just walked in and was
yeah.
here.
Thank yeah. yeah.
yeah.
Thanks, man, for coming
yeah.
on. Thank
yeah.
you both. And
no problem.
It's really crazy how the market is these days, you know? We got pros, we got cons.
Yeah.
We really
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
But I think it's always going to be that, no matter what you do here, no matter
yeah.
what we do online or anything like that.
Yeah. And I think also another thing that drives the market, I know we've been talking about movies, is once you hear a rumor, hey, this thing's going to be a movie, boom. Now everybody wants those books.
Oh, 100%.
Yes.
100%.
It's
yeah,
become
you know
a very stock market-oriented
yeah.
back-issue market lately.
Really?
Especially, I said too, back in like the past 10, well, I count a lot of it to eBay,
mm.
yeah.
which is very interesting to see
yes.
too, because before then it was like always, I said too, Comics Value Monthly,
yeah.
and then eventually Wizard came out, but Overstreet yeah. Price Guide came out in 1976,
mm.
and it was really the convention scene that really, really got the back-issue market moving. And before, if you go back, I mean, if you study some of the things and
mm-hmm.
looking at the history of back issues,
mm-hmm.
you go back like 30, 40 years into back issue bins, usually they were maybe double cover price. Give me it, unless it was a key issue.
Sure.
Like, I remember going into that bookstore, that same bookstore,
mm-hmm.
and I was checking out Daredevil a little bit because I picked up issue 212 of Daredevil off my 7-Eleven stand.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm going to see if I like this character. It was Daredevil and Kingpin. And Kingpin's like standing next to Daredevil with the villain around the hero. And then all these other more or less people on the ground, like Kingpin was more or less taking control of Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actually wasn't what really happened in the story.
Yeah.
But then I started looking at other Daredevils. I go, this character looks really cool. But then I was going through the back issues, and the 1960s Daredevils were in that back issue bin for like 40 to 60 cents a piece.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of 15-cent covers, like 1984. Daredevil was not a sought-after thing until
mm-hmm.
Frank Miller took over Daredevil. And Frank Miller took Daredevil to a whole new level, the same way Frank Miller took Batman out of the kind of the cheesiness of Batman
mm-hmm.
into the seriousness
was
of
it,
Batman.
Was it Frank Miller, I don't remember, that took the Kingpin and used them in Daredevil for the first time? Or what was he in
I think
before?
It was, dude.
Ooh,
because
yeah.
Frank Miller, yeah, because
yeah.
he was a Spider-Man
yes,
villain
Spider-Man
up
Man.
Until
yeah. Yeah.
that Frank Miller said this guy would
yeah.
be a great street-level villain for Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Frank Miller made the Kingpin a whole new level of bad. Excuse
yeah.
me, bad BA.
Yeah.
the best way to
oh,
put
no,
it.
Yeah, you can cuss on the
yeah.
show, whatever
yeah.
you say. Dude. We're in the store. So.
Yeah, that's right, dude. Cool, dude. Yeah, but
Daredevil
Frank Miller made Kingpin one of the scariest villains
oh
in comics.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
He's, and you know what?
And Bullseye, too, by that matter. Because
oh,
Bullseye
yeah.
was a joke
oh,
up until
yeah.
Frank Miller got a hold. One of the most shocking covers we've ever seen as a kid was Black Widow getting strangled by a hairdryer. and there was still that comics code authority thing on it. CCA was a big deal up until, I think it was Joe Quesada was one that said, F the comic code. And because said, why are we having all these other people monitor our own ratings? Do you know what I mean? Like, video games don't have it. Movies kind of have a platform, do you know what I mean, they all subscribe to, but why don't we do something that people understand more rather than that little stamp being so subjective to them saying yes or no?
I think didn't that happen when they decided to do Marvel Max?
Yeah, Marvel Max too.
That kind of started it.
Yep,
and they didn't need the code anymore.
Yeah, and it's just something like that. We're just going to put explicit content on here, and then it's up to the people that are selling the books to let their customers know what they're buying. But yeah, but that issue of Daredevil blew me away that that got comic code approved, because a few years, like in the 70s, about 10, 15 years earlier,
Spider-Man
was the first non-code approved book because they were dealing with drug use with Harry Osborn.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And then DC took follow on that with Green Arrow and Green Lantern, and Speedy was had the heroin addiction.
Right on the cover, and too. It was, was like, seriously, right then and there. Yeah.
And that was, like, unprecedented at that time during the Comics Code thing, because, as I said, too, is the old EC.
The
I can't
books.
Remember. Yeah, the horror books created the comic code because people were blaming the problems of their kids on comics. And then what was the name of the author that wrote Seduction of the Innocent? The psychologist wrote a book. I'm forgetting his name right now.
It's called Lost Innocent. I forgot what it's called.
It's going to come back to us at like midnight tonight. We're going to
But there were court cases where people were having more or less saying like comics need to control themselves. And there was even comic burnings by scout troops and churches.
That,
I mean, comics were kind of what people think about Grand Theft Auto a few years ago in the video games. Oh my gosh, these kids are going to go out and rob people because they're playing this video game.
But those,
it's like, dude, that's just...
Seduction of the Innocent.
Yes,
that's
the name of the book, but what's the name of the writer?
And it's weird that that book, it references lots of different comic books, and the value of the comic books are worth more money
now
if it's mentioned
in
the
book.
I mean, in the book.
Because it's part of comic history.
Because if you, what's funny is if you look at these comics that they're talking about, they're more violent, if not more, even more violent than stuff that's out now, like on the covers.
Yes.
Nowadays compared to older? Oh, 100%. Yeah, I noticed
some of those
my years.
DC ones. Yeah.
Yeah, it was post-war because there was no need for superheroes after the war. Because like a lot of the superhero battles during the war were against other country soldiers, not supervillains.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
Hitler,
so after the
Captain
war
America.
Was over, like Captain America was fighting mobsters. Like he could destroy mobsters.
Yeah, it's like,
do you know what I mean? So all of a sudden like that, dude, they're no match. It's too easy. Kids weren't interested. But then all of a sudden like, dude, these are like street level people with street level, you know, crime going on. And just like the fact of the supernatural, we don't understand, but it wasn't superhero versus supervillain. It took over the genre of comics, and romance took over too, as well.
Western
and comedies
comics.
And westerns.
Yes, western. Yeah, western.
And it wasn't until Stan Lee and then DC, obviously, too, forming the Justice League, because the only thing that really superheroes that survived were your Superman, your Batman, your Green Lantern, your Flash, and your Wonder Woman. And then eventually DC said, hey, why don't cells are still doing kind of sparse? Let's put them all together as a team and see what happens. And then Justice League blew up for the first time. And then Martin Goodman over at Marvel said, Stan, we need something like this at Marvel. And Stan was kind of went home, and, you know, Fantastic Four was born within that next week.
Yeah.
And then he kind of was out of desperation. Go ahead.
I want to say that we don't know if that's true.
Okay, really? That's a Stan story?
No.
Or that's from that book that way?
No,
that Marvel history?
Supposedly Kirby created the Fantastic Four in a DC comic book.
Oh, really?
All the characters match up.
Oh,
but
no,
they're
I
not,
know
they
that.
Don't have the same name,
Wow.
I like to give Kirby a lot more credit than
Kirby,
than
dude.
Gets.
SF2.
Yeah, he needs it. He really needs
it. He does,
it.
For sure.
Really. Like, we give, I mean, we love Stan, rest in peace.
Yes.
But Kirby, we had, in the earlier episodes, we had an episode dedicated to Kirby. And we talked
him and
Kirby.
Joe Simon created Captain America together.
Yes.
That's another thing people don't talk about quite a lot, too, is like Kirby was there, the original creator of Captain America with Joe Simon.
Yep.
And so I don't know if like Kirby was just the visual person, but he wrote his own stuff with New Gods and stuff like that at DC and came back and did Eternals
because,
at Marvel.
Well, back then,
but
of course,
creativity-wise, writing, Stan Lee had a magic pen.
But they also
did storytelling.
Did what they call the Marvel method, which is Stan basically... Stan
filled in.
Couldn't write all the books, right? So he would just write a plot and give it the plot to the artist and go, here, make the book. And then it was up to the artist to come up with all the visuals. And then it would come back, and then Stan came back and just wrote everything in. So there could be stuff there that he didn't plan. And I think, like, when he's talking about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, one of the biggest creations was, like, Galactus and Silver Surfer. He didn't create, like, Stan wasn't expecting the Silver Surfer. Kirby just created it on there, and he just added them in and just created the story around it.
Yeah. That's
the
thing.
Hard kind of stuff. That's hard.
I think they were easily peanut butter and jelly. They needed each other to be successful.
Yes.
And I said, too, the bread's the comic format, and Stan Lee and Jack Kirby just understood each other. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I think it's unfortunate Stan gets all the extra credit from is Stan was a, how would you say, a PR guy.
Yeah.
You know, he could get out and talk, and Jack Kirby, like, I love doing the work, I love being creative, but I'm not as good socially in public as Stan is. Stan's your hype man. Jack's your, dude, I'll, you know, anything you need, I can get it done, and it's going to look great.
Yeah.
But I really don't want to be here doing interviews like this. I really don't need to be speaking at the college campuses. I'm just not, it's not a me type of
the
thing.
The other thing
Jack
with
Kirby.
Stan, too, is.
And I don't think Stan is me type of thing either, but
he
it's just Stan. Yeah,
that's true. He did
that, and that's another reason why was he's around when all these movies blew up, and most of the guys that were there when he helped them had already passed away.
Yeah, except Ditko, which was weird.
But Ditko hated comics. He ended
up he's kind of like the Alan Moore of the '60s and '70s.
And he ended up just
I like that reference.
Yeah, he ended up just disassociating himself with all the things, with all mainstream books, and he was just making his own comics up until toward the end there when he died. But it's pretty crazy to think that he was like, I don't want anything to do with this. Like you said, just like Alan Moore when they made like those horrible movies, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and all that stuff. Like he's like, I don't even want my name on it. You just give all the credit to the writer. I mean, to the artist. And I guess they did that with Watchmen as well.
David Gibbons.
Really? Yeah, he goes, Alan Moore's like, I don't want my name on it. Just give it all to Dave Gibbons. That he hates. He hates his. He thinks that like DC did him wrong, basically, in a way that they did, and he hates them. Like they told him, like for Watchmen, he'd go, as soon as we stop printing it, the copies of the trades or whatever, that they would give them, they would start giving them more money, and they've never done that. That's because it's like considered one of like the greatest story comic book stories ever
it's
written.
It's never gone out of print.
Watchmen. Yeah. So that's why like he also hates him because he's not making money like he was promised that they would stop printing them, and they never did.
Damn shame. Damn shame that is. I mean,
and he probably could have written so much more stuff, I would think, if it wasn't for that happening.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
He was a prolific writer. He'd get stuff out on time, and he made Swamp Thing. You know, after the whole era where Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein left Swamp Thing, he brought Swamp Thing into a whole new genre
there with Frank Miller, I think, to start like the modern gritty version of heroes. Before then, that wasn't really a thing.
Well, they created flawed heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, heroes were always perfect up to that point. Do you know what I mean? And then that was the first flaw. I guess you could say a little bit, but that wasn't like the flawed characters were Stan Lee's with the
Spider-Man.
Yeah, and but not like where it's flaws that we could relate to. Do you know what I mean? I guess that's why Marvel characters took off more with fans too, because you could relate to more flaws.
That's why people like 100%. That's why people tend to be like, we like Marvel more because it's more relatable. I love DC. Yeah. I love Marvel. I love indies. Yeah. I love them all, but I can kind of connect more to Marvel a little bit. I think it's, I mean, all about you guys. I mean, you got Spider-Man shirt, Danny, and Spider-Man comic. I'm probably guessing, Spider-Man.
I said too, Spider-Man and X-Men. I mean, that's what I loved about the X-Men.
Yes.
It's like X-Men, they didn't depend on what you look like. Mm-hmm. You could be hated no matter what you look like. Yeah. Or, you know, like trying to gain acceptance from people that don't understand.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's beautiful in a lot of ways of like, I think, breaking any kind of stereotype of like, don't judge a book by its cover. Get to know a person.
That's a major X-Men thing. You know, it came out during all that civil rights movement.
Martin
stuff.
Martin Luther King era.
That's why they were created.
Yeah,
I mean, 100%. We just covered X-Men in comics and in movies and TV on our Comics and Coffee Talk Show episode segment, and that's 100% it. X-Men is such a beautiful thing, and it's it kind of what we talked about a little bit before was. Comics themselves can be influential. Comics themselves can be something that changes people, changes the world, like it has been.
Yes.
I mean, look at pop culture now. Now it bleeds comic books.
I've been thinking since Stan Lee passed away the past month, I mean, comic books are going to become a dogma. There's Christian dogma, there's, you know, Buddhist dogma. It's going to sound weird. I might be going too far over the edge there, but 100, 200, 300 years from now, like if you look at people preaching good ways to live, comics have been doing it for the past 80 years.
Alrighty, folks, don't you dare just go yet, because I have with me a special guest. Now, do you have some landscaping problems? Do you have something that, you know, you need some help with in the good old-fashioned outdoors. Well, I have with me here today a very special guest. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name's Jesse Ewing. I'm the owner of Ewing Land Management, LLC.
That's right, folks. Right now, this can be considered a sponsor. Jesse here is a sponsor of us. Ewing Land Management is a sponsor of the Comic Chronicle podcast. And, you know, we wanted to bring him on here today because, you know, people need help. And Jesse needs work as well. So it's all, those two and two, they work together sort of thing. Today, folks, and Jesse, kind of give a backstory. What is Ewing Land Management?
Ewing Land Management is a young and growing company. We specialize in basically everything to do with tree care, removal, pruning, planting, pest diagnosis, hazard diagnosis, and mitigation, and some general landscaping services like FireWise, you know, thinning brush for fire safety and things of that nature too.
So things that people desperately need. So that's what you do. Now, you've been doing this for how long?
Just about 20 years.
About 20 years. So this is to say, folks, he's experienced. He's very experienced. Now, where exactly do you operate?
We operate out of Payson, Arizona. We operate in basically the greater Arizona, the whole state. We also operate in New Mexico and parts of California.
All right. So folks in those areas, give Jesse a call. Now, where can they contact you at, Jesse?
You can contact us at 928-363-1893. You can contact us through our website, which is www.ewinglandmanagement.com. You can also contact us through our Facebook page at Ewing Land Management LLC.
And folks, that's where you can find Jesse at today. And make sure you guys give him a contact. You hit him up, go whatever. You can also check out the website as well. Be sure to check out that website, ewinglandmanagement.com, because you guys can see all of his work that he's done so far. You can see how they operate, equipment, and everything else as such. So folks, make sure you go check him out. Now, back to the show.
Do you know what I mean? Like, even Superman, they used to compare to the second, you know, like, oh, look how similar to this is to the Christian birth of Christ type of thing. A man comes from somewhere non-known and comes to save us all. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's funny seeing that because they were, you know, created by two Jewish people that, you know what I mean, don't believe that Jesus is, you know, the Savior, which Christian is based off of. Yeah. But there's a similarity things, too, of like that. Mm-hmm. It's common good life practices. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Yes. And always look out for the people that are underprivileged. That is superhero dogma to a T.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like there's Spider-Man, one after another. Oh, I mean, yeah. He saved the people that, you know, some people say that's not worth my time. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And X-Men, same thing too as well. I mean, X-Men, Magneto, technically it's kind of strange. I mean, it's an interesting parallel, but, you know, Malcolm X is Magneto and Professor X is Martin Luther King.
Yeah, which they were based off of.
They don't have any real hate for people. They have hate for the actions.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And so how people react to the actions, you can either make bad choices or good choices. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I mean? That's like the gray area, I think, between a lot of like Spider-Man movies. If you watch all the Spider-Man movies, none of these villains are pure evil like the Joker. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the Joker wants to see the world burn? Well, Michael P. Keaton, you know, the Vulture inside.
I'd say Green Goblin.
Yeah, Green Goblin.
He's semi.
Yeah, he's close, I mean, too. Yeah. But he's probably as close as it gets in Spider-Man villains. But yeah. Even with that, too, wasn't it an accident that happened to Norman Osborn in the first Spider-Man movies with the experiments on it? Like where something happened that pushed him into becoming the Green Goblin?
Yes, yeah.
And, I mean, Sandman, do you know what I mean? Trying to help out his daughter. I mean, everything was, there were tragic decisions that turned him down a path that was opposite of good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like any bad person, in a way, sometimes you
make bad choices.
You make bad choices, and that's what leads you down that path. And that's the same thing for the, like you said, they have those flaws. You know.
And how quickly can you start correcting, or do you keep on going down the dark path and you don't turn back?
Yeah.
And that's something too. It's like that. Like I was raised by a psychologist, and so there's a lot of things that were kind of pointed at me in that way too. You can make a bad choice, but where do you go from here? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like that. And then you kind of like logic, I think, is a huge thing that sometimes gets forgotten about in society. Is like that, you know, it's like that if you keep on making the same choice, it's not going to get any better. Yeah. It's going to get worse. And the worse it gets, the harder it's going to be to turn around to make those changes.
Like, to me, the toughest one is the Punisher.
Oh, yeah.
He's an anti-villain, he's an anti-hero, but what he does is good, but then he's killing people.
Yeah.
Like, there's that two ways.
He's taken to the drastic, the edible standard in a way.
Double-sided coin. Yeah. You know, that really is Two-Face Bun. But, either way, and so, it's so true. Like, comics themselves, there's a quote, it's by Kevin Smith, and he says, right now, in 100 years, these will be our gods.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of like the dogma type of thing, yes.
Exactly that. And so, you guys are 100% right, because we're going to look back and we're going to see ancient texts. Oh, here's Marvel something something, you know, like here's Spider-Man number 6.
Check out what happened to Lizard here. I mean, you know,
Kurt
Connors was just a professor scientist. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're
coming. He's wanting a new arm. You know, it's like that. He didn't know what was going to happen to him.
Yes. And oh, my God. And we're covering the characters I absolutely love, by the way. Yeah. So I'm easy to be like, yes. I support. Yeah,
unpredicted consequences. And then how do you deal with those consequences after they happen?
We're getting deep. We're getting really deep and emotional. Fans might be like, oh my God, we're going to need to smoke a weed or get a drink. I'm curious, guys. Now, kind of getting a little bit away from that so we don't get too further emotional and make people cry and question.
It's the holidays, right? Everyone gets a little bit emotional.
Yeah, that's true. We're all like, our bank accounts are low. They're all sad.
Yeah.
What is your guys' currently, Ken, I don't know if you're currently reading. I mean, obviously, Nanny, you and I, what would be your guys' series that you would recommend to people at the current moment?
Oh man, dude!
You read currently that you really like. I'll get mine, but you guys go first.
I'm really behind in my reading, to be honest with you. But the one book I always still go to and I still like is The Walking Dead. I really like The Walking Dead, and I'm not a zombie person, to be honest. So I'm not really a big horror fan, but in the early days of when it came out, I just heard a really big buzz about it, and I'm like, well, I don't like zombies, but everybody says it's good. Why not try it out? So, I mean, as you've seen in the TV show, the story is basically, it's a drama, but it's set in a zombie world, and like you talk about relating to characters, you feel like you can relate to some of these people and the things that they're going through, and I think that's one of the big draws. And Kirkman is just a great writer.
He
writes it very well, and I tend to also read things based on writers sometimes, you know, and like Dan Slott. I loved his run on Spider-Man. And he's also can mix in, you know, with the action, but he can also be funny. And I like a little humor in there, and he does that very well.
That's true. I mean, and it's Marvel. And I'm a wuss, though, when it comes to Walking Dead, because not because it's too graphic or anything like that, it's because I want to catch up on it, but I look at how much is there to catch up on, I'm like, oh my God, I can't. Yeah. It's like, you just look, and you're like, this omnibus is out right now, and I'm like, that should be a sign.
Yeah.
Like, one day when I retire, I'll be like, I'm going to start working this.
It reads super fast, though.
Yeah. Does it really?
Oh, yeah, because that same thing, too, is like that. I felt the same way before I started reading it, because I remember walking into a comic shop when it first came out, and I'm gonna sound like a little bit of like a comic art snob in a way, but I love the full color. I grew up watching color TV. I want to see everything in its most dynamic form. And then someone said, dude, there's this brand new book that's called Walking Dead, dude. I mean, it's amazing. And I said, well, let me take a look at it, because I trust his judgment. Beautiful yellow color cover, Rick walking in front of, do you know what I mean, this window where zombies are reaching out at him. And I'm going, this is pretty epic. I opened the first page of black and white comic. And I'm going, to me, it sounds sad, but when I was younger, up until I opened the comic shop, I didn't understand black and white comics as much. Same thing as a kid. I turned down Turtles number 1 in a trade with another kid that collected comics, because I'm going, yeah, I know they're popular, man, but I feel like the comic's not done. It's like a coloring book. It sounds weird saying that, and all due respect to black and white comics, I get it now. Man. The story drives it. We don't need to even have the color in it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whether it's Turtles, whether it's Walking Dead, whether it's Think Tank, there's some great comics in there that don't have any color in it.
Yeah.
But it's story driven, and they don't want the distractions. They want you to focus on the story.
Yeah.
Or it's just back in the Turtles day, maybe they didn't have enough money, but they kept it. you know, keep it in black and white because that was their standard they were starting. And it's just when you sit there and read Walking Dead, Susan's one, ironically my wife, that got me into reading Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Because I would spot read it so I could understand what's going on for my customers, but not read it from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And she like just ate it up, and she hates the same thing too. She cannot stand horror movies. And I'm going like, really? It's like, okay, how are you eating this up? And she goes, it's not about the horror and the zombies, it's about the people and how they get through these situations. Yeah. And I'm going, wow. So I bought her the omnibus for Valentine's Day one year. And she read it again. Yeah. And I'm kind of going, oh my gosh, because she just read it, spot reading it here, and she never owned it. And it's just something she loved reading. Bring it home, read them, bring it back. And so I got her the omnibus, both, I think it was the volume one and volume two at that time. No, because it was just volume one. So I think it was around issue 75 when I started reading on a regular monthly basis. Yeah. And the first omnibus is 48 issues. Sure. And so, you know, after she was done reading it again, like, do you mind if I read it? And she goes, sure. And I read through it, and I'm going, oh my gosh, you can't even tell where the breaks are in this. And the one thing I love about a comic story, if it's in trade paperback form, I don't want to know exactly where I'm at. I just want to enjoy the story. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And then when the next thing I know is I'm going at it, I'm going, wow, dude, I have no idea what issue I'm on. This book is just flowing. And next thing I know, within 3 days, I'm done with all 48 issues, reading it at night before going to bed.
You've sold me.
It's insane. And really I've never seen a comic like that. Yeah. That is something that, to me, does not appeal to my interests as a comic book reader up until that point. It's just something amazing. The people just, they pull you in.
Yeah, it's one of those books that is, if sometimes, you know, you have friends that don't collect comics and they ask you, well, if I want to read comics, what would you recommend? And it's kind of almost, or either you recommend what do you like to watch on TV, or you kind of go toward, like, you know, Walking Dead, or... Even though I'm not a big DC fan, I like a lot of the Vertigo titles that they made.
I used to say
I loved Fables.
Oh my God!
And that's a book that I would recommend to a lot of people that didn't read comics. Like, this is a great story, and it's not superhero, but it's fantasy, and it's just really dark. Interesting, and it can be very dark.
Very dark. Yeah. Even like the first.
I'll
go on about Fables, man. Don't get me started because it's so beautiful.
But besides that, there's also like Why the Last Man was great.
Yes, Brian K. Vaughan's amazing. Yeah,
and the other title that I really loved, which I wish it was a movie or a TV show, was called Scout.
I don't know if you
read that.
Jason Aaron.
Yeah, Jason Aaron wrote it.
Really?
It's a really like gritty, noir type of story. It's a whole story that happens on an Indian reservation. It's almost kind of like a gangster type of
Walking Tall on steroids.
Walking Tall
with The Rock, and or before that, wasn't it like a remake too?
But it's all Native Americans. But it's such a great story, and it's partially based on a real life story, and it's really good.
Dude, Jason Aaron, you feel like that when you read his stuff. You feel like he lived everything he writes, and it's amazing like that.
One of my best friends is Native American, and I introduced him to the book, and he loved it. And then one day we went to a comic book show. We went to a WonderCon, I think, the last time it was in San Francisco, and Jason Aaron was there, and he was staying at the hotel that we were at, and we happened to see him in the lobby. So we decided to go up to him and talk to him about the book. And my friend grew up on a reservation, and he told him, man, you caught life on the reservation really well. And he's like, did you grow up there? He goes, no, I just researched it all.
Really?
And that's where I got all of my ideas for in the stories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You guys are selling me on new books here. Yeah. Not going to lie. Like, I got my couple, but it's like these ones are really selling me.
Yeah, and that's what the beautiful thing about Vertigo. My favorite Vertigo books was DMZ. Have you ever read that DMZ?
Yes.
DMZ was like such a great, like, social political look at America if it keeps on going the direction it's going. Do you know what I mean? And it's like that. There's rumors about Texas wanting to get out of the union. Do you know California splitting into two states?
Currently in DMZ right now?
No, just in society.
DMZ came out.
I mean, I guess it goes back to a modern day of this the American Civil War.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But on a much smaller scale, Manhattan Island decided like that. We want to change the way people live in America. And then America pretty much said, you know what? Either you go by what we're doing or you do it on your own.
Mm.
And so the people of Manhattan Island seceded from the Union, and they were cut off from America completely. They had no more electricity, no more money funding. They had more or less just whatever they could do to make a living for themselves. It was no longer America-backed. and it was interesting because now all of a sudden, they, since they were cut off from like any type of media, there was no media coverage of what was going on in there or anything, eventually curiosity came around from me, like, what's going on in there? And so one of the opening stories is this journalist going in to try to get an interview with his helicopter TV team. Well, the people on the DMZ shoot him down because he wasn't invited. And so the helicopter crash happens, and the only person that lives is the movie camera intern. And so he's kind of like trying to get back in contact with outside the DMZ to come bail him out. And they're like, what, you're in there? Dude, get our story. It's but I'm just like the intern. What do you, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm just learning. It's like that. Well, you know, when you get your story, we'll come get you. And so he's forced into assimilate himself into the DMZ. And he's thinking, like, I'm just going to get killed. But he kind of starts more or less meeting people, and he starts realizing that these people don't have bad ideas. It's just these are things like, so the story he's getting about everything that's wrong about the DMZ turns into him sympathizing with what's going on in the DMZ. And when they try bailing him out, he's like, no, I'm going to stay. So it kind of becomes like a, do you know what I mean? A social political thing of like someone that came in from the outside and the inside saying like, this is better than what's going on out here. It becomes like a major thing. It's like the U.S. government's got to decide like that. We can't let these ideas get out. And so it kind of becomes like that. How do we negotiate this hostage situation of being like, they have to on the outside make it look like a hostage situation, and he wants to stay there. And so it's two different things because they don't have any press on the inside of the DMZ. Do you know what I mean? Because they're just worried about what's going on in there, and their communication structure is totally different than what the rest of America is. And it's just, I think it's Brian Wood that writes that, right?
Yes, I believe so.
An amazing, amazing look at something that is social political of the fact of like, wow, dude, what is, you know, American and what is not American. So it's kind of a cool little thing of like civil rights look at things.
That is kick ass. I have heard about it, but never knew any details about it.
And I don't want to spoil the whole story. I'm just like telling you like little basic roots of what the story is about. It's done.
It's done.
It's unfortunately it's over.
You're breaking my heart.
Yeah, dude, I read 8 volumes. Was it about 6 to 8 volumes?
I don't remember.
I think it went around 50 issues. I might have gotten
a little. That's a good run.
Yeah, but it was. Brian Wood's a very, very good writer too, and he looks at society as like the same way. I guess you could say Stan Lee did back in the 1960s, is what can we do to make society better? And I think Brian K. Vaughan does a little bit of that too in a science fiction more way.
The saga.
Saga and like Why the Last Man, of like where, you know, it's like what's it mean to be human rather than what we see around us.
Because when you you tell somebody the concept of Why the Last Man, they're like, that's a male fantasy when you first hear the premise of it. But then it's like, no, it's not. You got to read it to like understand.
Look in the pages.
You look in the pages of what it is. Yeah, that book was so very well written.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about Vertigo. I think Vertigo set the premise for Image getting out of superheroes and into other types of storytelling. Because Image was predominantly a superhero storytelling books until Robert Kirkman obviously with Walking Dead. But Vertigo was kicking butt in this non-superhero storytelling that was just very, very well done. I mean, gosh, what was that? I almost forgot the name of it. It was kind of the like kind of Vertigo's answer to Danger Girl. But it was about the spy and
I bought those books.
Ed Benes did artwork in it. It was
Connor did some of it too.
Yeah, and it was
an African American woman.
Yes,
right?
And then like the sidekick was a homosexual sidekick.
That was a funny book actually.
And it was awesome. It was so well written. I can't remember that it was a Codename Knockout.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, dude. Codename Knockout.
Yes, Codename Knockout. That was it.
And the art's gorgeous in it, and the stories are such. It's kind of satire of James Bond movies.
It was Robert Rowdy, I think, is how you.
Yeah, Robert Rowdy, right? Yeah, R-O-D-I.
Yeah, R-O-D-I. That's the guy that wrote it.
Yeah, and it was very well done.
Yeah,
I was very. It was a fun read. If you just want something short, simple, I think it was like 18 issues. It wasn't that long.
That was a fun.
But the art was gorgeous, and just some of the stupid spy stuff they did was like Spies Like Us meets James Bond type of thing, or like that Mr. and Mrs. Not even Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's just
something like that.
The more satire.
Yes.
Fun of like just Danger Girl type of storytelling.
That's right.
But it's fun, dude. It was a really fun read.
You guys are selling me on so many books here. I've not read yet. I'm just thinking like my money's gonna go bam, and again, you're gonna get a lot more richer in about 5 minutes.
And with me, Mark Miller right now has been one of my favorites over the past 15 years.
Oh yes.
Kick-ass.
And dude, the Ultimates, like all the Marvel Avengers franchise loosely connects more to the Ultimates than it does to the other 40 years of Avengers history. I mean, Nick Fury being oh my gosh, dude.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Thank you, dude. I paused that other brain fart on his name.
Yeah.
That's Brian Hitch and Mark Miller's idea.
Yeah, that's not the original Fury. That was Ultimate Fury. Yeah, right.
Yeah. There is a 616 Fury now. That's his Nick Fury's natural Nick Fury's son.
Yes,
that is currently right. Nick Fury. That he had a more or less a secret, not secret, but when he was in S.H.I.E.L.D., he fell in love with another agent. And so she, more or less, they hid her in society with the son, never to find out that it was Nick Fury was the father until someone secretly found out and came after him. Marcus Johnson, is that his name, right?
Since I'm kind of behind a little bit, is the original Nick Fury still alive or is he dead still?
He's supposedly a celestial type of thing now because in Original Sin...
He was like the Watcher, right?
Yeah, it's like a Watcher.
Like the Watcher or something?
Yeah, because in Original Sin...
I thought I was caught up, man.
LMDs have been down here on Earth, like posing as him. And that's why they made Marcus Johnson the permanent Nick Fury, because they already set the precedent inside of the Avengers that Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury, but they had to explain it in the 616 universe, so they worked it into the 616 universe too. So
he appears in that miniseries, right? His first appearance.
Yeah, it's like Shattered.
Shattered. Oh. Yeah, Shattered.
Shattered.
I want to say it's not Shattered Grid because I'm thinking of Power Rangers right now. Shattered.
You're right.
But it was that's when they introduced him into the 616 universe. Well, Marcus Johnson found out that he was Nick Fury's son, and ironically, they did the whole tropic thing too during the miniseries. He had his eye taken out.
That's right.
Dude, Shattered. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called, but something Shattered something.
Shattered scars, maybe something like that, dude.
But that was the introduction of the Marcus Johnson as Nick Fury to the 616 universe. So there is Nick Fury that is similar to the one in the movies in the 616 universe, but they're both there.
Mm.
You know, and now Nick Fury's kind of a god type of thing, watcher in space.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you want to read Original Sin, that's kind of a cool story, but that's where they introduce a bunch of the next generation Marvel superheroes there.
Yeah.
Like Silk was introduced there because that's where Spider-Man was shown. Like there's every character was shown something that they did not know about their history.
Mm.
And Spider-Man saw there was someone else that was bit by the spider besides him, and that turned out being Silk. Thor found out he wasn't worthy for the first time. That led to Jane Foster becoming Thor. And a few other things, too. Angela was brought into the Marvel Universe around that time, too, and they revealed that Angela is actually the sister of both Thor and Loki. Is that right? Was it Thor and Loki?
I don't remember correctly.
I want to say yes. I'm 99% sure yes, but some fan on here is going to comment, no, you idiots!
It's like that. But there was a lot of things introduced to the Marvel storytelling through Original Sin, and the one thing they did majorly was they made Nick Fury into a Watcher. And like that, he's been up in space being the first level of defense towards anything that's a threat to the universe.
I like that idea. I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, and I don't know whether or not Secret Wars retrofitted all that type of stuff or not. I still haven't seen Nick Fury too much around the Marvel Universe since then.
Because
the Doctor Doom thing of him and Molecule Man and Doctor Strange kind of tweaking reality to try to fix everything.
It's kind of quote unquote fix.
So that's the one thing I think comic fans that get frustrated with the most is canon's become so gray itself now.
Yes.
And it's like 100%. Hard even as like a comic shop owner to try to explain someone, so what's going on with Marvel now compared to 10 years ago? It is a lot of different changes that have happened. And some things are still there because sometimes like they say this is still continuity, and other times they're saying, well, that's kind of been reworked in a way. You know, it's like that Carol Danvers being Captain Marvel. Yeah, they had the actual flow that actually did take place. She stopped being Miss Marvel. She became Captain Marvel. New Miss Marvel. You know, she got hit by the Terrigen Mist, and that's, you know, Kamala Khan.
Yeah,
and so, like, you know, which is awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing. And the news on it that the artist or the writer is leaving today. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
Yeah, she's leaving. I don't think, is the artist leaving?
I think they got a whole new team coming in.
Okay.
Yeah, January 29th. I read a little, I was at work at the time when I was reading the article, so I just skimmed through it, but she's leaving.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jason Latour leaving, Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
And man, that was the only person that really worked on Spider-Gwen until the new series started. And same with Brian Michael Bendis on Miles Morales. I mean, there was a huge run of Ultimate Spider-Man, going back to Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, he wrote every issue of the Ultimate Spider-Man. 235, I think, or something like that.
Yeah,
and that was just unprecedented. He broke every record of a writer on a book.
He modernized Spider-Man in those stories. And if you ever read the original Spider-Man books, it has the same feel.
Yes.
Like, I went back, I remember I got into a thing where I wanted to read all the original Marvel stories, so I didn't want to buy the books because a lot of them are very expensive, but you could buy, like, what were called Marvel Essentials. Mm-hmm. They were all in black and white, and you get like 25 issues or 30 issues in a book. And I remember reading like Fantastic Four, like the first, I don't know, 100 issues. The same thing with Spider-Man and X-Men. They're all, of course, they're kind of outdated, but the only ones that didn't feel as outdated were all the Spider-Man ones. Oh. There was something about them that translated, that still felt modern in a way.
I think you like about Spider-Man, and I know like we're going on time, but is Spider-Man, he's one that they always try to make so he's relatable to
you. Yes.
You can try to, I mean, obviously with the time that recently, when he was in the past couple years, where he owned his own like park industries and stuff like that. Obviously, most of us here at the stable and in the store, we're not like, oh, we're not billionaires now or anything. Like, we're not Tony Stark, you know? And then now he's getting back into his roots. He's getting back into that. So Spider-Man has always been the relatable hero, like 100%. I can't think of any other. There's maybe a couple.
Do you ever feel the Peter Parker and the early gain of Spider-Man is very Archie-like?
I guess.
Like Archie Andrews is technically a little bit of Peter Parker. With like Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane kind of
happening.
Betty Brant.
Someone talked to Stan Lee about that. And he's like, no! And then he's like, okay,
I see a lot of Archie influence inside of Spider-Man. Yes. The early days of Spider-Man before they got out of high school.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Then once he got out of high school, things started changing a little bit. But that original root character has been Flash Thompson, obviously.
Yeah.
Kind of be like Moosehead and, you know what I mean? And so on. So what was this Moosehead? Was the Moose... Well, the Archie characters,
Jughead.
And Jughead's kind of like Harry Osborn.
To a T. Oh.
But,
see, we're big fans, folks. If you can't already listen by now, we know what we're talking about, and we're big fans here. Now, we're coming to a close here. Now, I do want to tell you guys, make sure if you're in downtown Glendale or in Arizona itself, come on down to Drawing the Comics in downtown Glendale. So worth your time. Ken, what is the address?
We're located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue, and that's in Glendale, Arizona, 85301. If you're looking for the area how to get there, if you go to our website, drawntocomics.com, there is a map page, and feel free to contact us through any form of social media, and anything you need, we'll be here to try to find it.
Fantastic. Now, where can they find you two on social media, by chance?
What? I am not really on social media.
Damn it, Danny.
I know. I'm a little bit anti-media.
Not bad at all. It's kind of a good thing.
I do have a Facebook page for my website, but you could just contact me through my website, which is pencilinkcolor.com.
Cool. Yeah. And it's the same thing, too. It's like we just do social media just for the store. It's just Drawn to Comics, just how the store is spelled, on both Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook Twitter's for me, so you won't see responses on Twitter from me too much, because I keep on forgetting my Twitter password.
That's kind of important.
But Facebook, it does everything for me, so I can look at Twitter sometimes to see the answers. I'm not too keen with Twitter, but Facebook and Instagram pretty regularly. But it just revolves around the store. We try to keep everything positive and fresh as much as possible for people.
Give them the name of your Instagram.
Yeah, just Drawn to Comics as well.
Drawn to Comics, yeah. Make sure, guys, you follow both these guys. Make sure you check them out, what they do and whatnot. And, of course, if you want to follow everything for the Comic Chronicle podcast, go to @RealFanCorp on Twitter and Instagram, FanCorp Network on Facebook and YouTube, because we got fan stuff coming out, fan films, we got more podcasts, we got all this fun stuff coming out. So, folks, make sure you go do that, and then support the Comic Chronicle podcast, which you guys have been doing, at patreon.com/comicchronicle. That's patreon.com/comicchronicle. So, folks, make sure you come to Draw on the Comics. I have my guest here, Danny, my guest here, Ken. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dakota, for having us, man.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you, guys, and make sure you guys subscribe and follow on podbean.com or iTunes, wherever you guys listen. And stay classy, Glendale.